Well, my name is Alfred Knightbridge. I was born in Malden and I still live in the house where I was born in Spittle Road. I went to school in Malden at All Saints School, which was All Saints School in London Road then. The school in Highlands Drive didn't exist, and indeed Highlands Drive didn't exist. After that I went to Malden Grammar School, after that to university, which was Oxford, and then worked for nearly 30 years at what was then called the Public Record Office, that is now the National Archives. I therefore spent nearly all my life in Malden, apart from the time I was away at university, but didn't work here. My father, also named Alfred Knightbridge, had a shop in the High Street, which was a wholesale and resale tobacconist's. My mother, who was Violet Julia Archer before marriage, but was always known as Lally, had worked at Bentall's during the First World War as a tally clerk, and later on, between the wars, at John Sad and Sons as a shorthand typist. That ended when she got married in 1934. My father had the house built in 34 and I was born in 1935. At that time, we lived right on the edge of Malden. Practically next to us was Spittle Farm. Spittle Farmhouse is still there in Spittle Road, but the farm is long gone. Both the farmyard and all the fields below it are now built over. At that time, below us were fields, really uninterrupted as far as you could see. Acacia Drive near us was a very small gravelled cul-de-sac with just a few houses. It petered out into fields at the end. There was a footpath which would take you down to Washington Road, which likewise just petered out into fields at that time. Apart from that, that area had no roads at all. It was all fields.
So there were very few houses on Spittle Road at the time.
Well, it was built along Spittle Road, round about up to where we were, and a few houses beyond that. On the other side of the road, there was one house opposite us, but nothing between that and the Queen Victoria pub, which is still there. But beyond that house, there were no other houses between that and Malden West Station, which was still there when I was young. That area was occupied by a sports field where the grammar school during the war used to play football. Then sports field at the school was quite small. It was only after the war they extended it southwards, but they needed to use another ground somewhere, so they used this sports ground that was almost opposite us. There was no Highlands Drive then. The ground did have a pavilion over backing on the railway at the back, though it became rather ramshackle in its last years. And there was a shed used for storing sports equipment and so on near the road. So I can remember seeing football matches going on there. It had been used for playing cricket before the war, because my father remembered playing cricket there.
Do you remember using the train from the station?
From West Station, I can remember travelling on it only once. It closed to passenger traffic at the start of the Second World War. It stayed open for goods traffic till the late 1950s. But I do remember once being taken on it just for a ride from West Station around to East Station. I can't have been more than about three or four at the time, because I was only four when the war started. But I can remember walking along there with my parents at night and seeing the station all lit up. It had two platforms, and there was a staircase each side leading down to the platforms, and that those staircases were lit up at night.
And during the war, the station was used?
Well, it wasn't used for passenger traffic anymore after the start of the war. The goods station was still used. That was the other side of the tunnel.
Okay.
It's where the West Station yard is now. In fact, the goods shed is still there, quite a large red brick building. One of my treats when very young was being taken along to watch the shunting going on in the goods yard. In the field, looking over the goods yard, all built over now, of course, but there were two little hillocks, and I remember being taken, mostly by my grandmother, to sit on top of one of these hillocks and watch the shunting going on. We used to take our breakfast with us sometimes. It was always referred to as breakfast on a hill by my parents.
So you were quite a young lad then?
Oh, I must have been sort of four or five when that was going on, I think.
And what memories do you have of wartime? How was Malta affected in the war?
Well, there was a certain amount of damage from bombing, notably in Washington Road, which there were some houses badly damaged by bombing, and indeed several people were killed. One of them was one of my teachers at All Saints School, Mrs. Wright. I think her name is on the war memorial in Malden High Street. But I remember her, certainly. It must have happened when I was about seven. I can remember the morning after that happened, walking down to school, and I saw my cousin Mary, who was then Mary Knightbridge and lived in Cherry Garden Road. And she called across to me, "Teacher's dead." It seemed to be very casual in those days. I suppose we were used to a war being on and people getting killed. And then later, a flying bomb, a V-1, hit the house in Acacia Drive. Well, in fact, it was two semi-detached houses. They were later built, rebuilt. But I remember the next morning looking across there, and there was just one corner of one of the houses left. But miraculously, nobody was killed. The Ennells and the Coopers used to live there. Of course, Michael Ennells still lives in one of them there.
I remember you telling me you had an air raid shelter.
Yes, or we used to sleep in the air raid shelter during the war. My father had it built early on, must have been 39 or 40, and we slept out there right through the war until BE Day in 1945.
So for years, we used to
sleep out there. We were able to listen to the radio there. I mean, we had a loudspeaker there, from what I remember, which I think we were actually switched on the radio inside the house, but it ran through into the shelter, so we could listen to that. And of course, it was lit, and we had some heating in there, certainly.
And the schools continued as normal during the war?
Well, as far as possible. I remember when the air raid warning went, the siren, which was at the police station, we all had to dash for the shelters. Now, shelters had been built at the back of the school in London Road. Yes, I remember that going on. It was very cold out in the shelters too, where we sat on concrete, unless we were lucky enough to grab a cushion. We just hoped that it would be over quickly and we would hear the all clear siren. But that happened quite a few times, yes.
Roughly how old were you when war finished?
I was 10 years old. That was in 1945.
Still in the
yes, I was I was still at All Saints. I didn't leave that until 1946 when I started at the grammar school.
And then you went on to Oxford?
After school, yes, indeed.
Yes. How was that for you? Quite a change from...
Well, it was a change from Malden, certainly. Yes, I mean... Another thing was that was the period of national service. Quite a few did national service before going on to university. I didn't. In fact, I went straight from school to university. So quite a few who were there, in fact, were much more experienced, shall we say, than I was. They'd spent 2 years in the forces. In a way, I felt, at first at least, a bit out of my depth, socially at least. I could, on the whole, cope with the work, which, although often difficult, I managed to keep up with it at least.
And you studied?
I studied PPE, Philosophy, Politics and Economics.
And can I ask the result of your years of study?
Well, I got a first in
PPE. Wonderful, yes.
Afterwards went on to do some postgraduate research, which involved using sources in the Public Record Office. So it was an advantage when I applied for a job there later on as an assistant keeper, as it was then called.
So you more or less went from university into your first job?
After having done some postgraduate work. Not straight from having done the degree. Yes, and I spent nearly 30 years at the Public Record Office, not on the same sort of work all the time. I did different jobs over the years.
It was like a series of different jobs.
Yes, I was working at the same place, but doing quite different jobs at different times.
Can you tell me a little bit about travelling? It seems to travel from Malden to London every day was quite an undertaking. Yeah.
Well, at first I could still get on the train at Malden because the East Station was still open. So you travelled from East Station on that line, which by that time had a diesel unit on it, no longer steam trains. That took you to Witham, and then you got the main line train from Witham to Liverpool Street. Then the Public Record Office was in Chancery Lane, so it was just three stations along on the Central Line. Later on in the 1970s, the office moved out to Kew, so it was a longer journey then. Also, the East Station closed in 1964, about a year after I'd started commuting. After that, I got lifts from various people over the years, particularly from a man named Ken Bevins, who many in Malden will remember. Someone was talking to me about him only 3 days ago. He also was in the drama group that I belonged to, but he gave me a lift over a good many years. Yeah. He was a BBC sound engineer. And other people, including Jeanette Lovely, whom many in the Malden Society will remember. She used to come to meetings regularly. She also later on gave me many lifts. Normally, to Hatfield Peverall's, that was the nearest station to go to. If I didn't get a lift, I had to get the bus, normally to Chelmsford.
Yeah. I did hear there was a bus or perhaps a coach that went from Malden all the way through to London.
Yes, but I never travelled on that. I thought about it, but I never actually... I think it didn't go at quite the right times, or the timing didn't fit in with when I needed to arrive at work. So I never used that.
That was quite a useful facility for some people.
For some people it was. But I remember seeing people catching that coach in the morning. Yes, it was running in my later years, travelling to London.
And did you find the trains quite reliable and on time? Because we always have complaints about trains now.
People complain then about it. I mean, apart from the fact there were strikes from time to time, but they got delayed from it. Frozen points in the earlier years especially were a source of, and fog, delay to preceding train derailment, points failure, all sorts of things. Cancellations and delays happened then as much as they do now, I think.
So travelling all the way over to Kew, that was obviously quite a huge amount of time for travelling.
It was, yes, it took me at a minimum 2 hours each way.
Did it?
So it took up quite a lot of time.
But I mean, obviously the job was worth it.
Well, I enjoyed the job, certainly. I was lucky, I think, in that I was doing work that I enjoyed most of the time, at least. And it was increasingly well paid as I gradually moved up.
And that all helped, doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
Alfred, can you tell us a little bit about your memories and stories of the grammar school in Malden when you were there?
Right, well, as you probably know, I did write a bit about my years at the grammar school for the book that appeared a few years ago about 400 years of education in Malden. But anyway, I will talk a bit about the grammar school. There were four headmasters while I was there in succession. First, there was Mr. Ingham, Arthur Ingham, a very much liked, popular man. After the first 2 years I was there, he departed to teach at Wanstead County High School. He was succeeded by a man named Charles Stewart, whose headship ended rather unfortunately. There was a visit from I think it was still His Majesty's Inspectorate then, and rather like Ofsted visits now, I should imagine, and he had to go after that. He had a drink problem, which was the problem, and so he was judged not fit to be administering the school. There was then briefly a sort of rescue operation by a man named Arthur Joseph, only for two terms until a new headmaster was appointed. He in fact had been headmaster at Wanstead, the school to which Arthur Ingham had gone. He had retired, but he came back to do this rescue of the school. In fact, I owe quite a lot to him, because it was he who pushed me into applying to Oxford, which I doubt whether I would have done otherwise. I would have applied to a university somewhere, but I don't think the idea would even have occurred to me. So I really owe him quite a lot. Yeah. I was, in fact, in my last year, head boy at the school. You can, if you look at the list of head boys of the grammar school, which you can still see in the Plume School, you'll find my name on it. But my predecessor as head boy, who was a man named Robin Clark, who I'm still in touch with, he lives in South America now, he likewise said he owed it to Arthur Joseph. He also went to Oxford, went to a different college, and he said he owed it entirely to Arthur Joseph that he got there. And then after that, Mr. Webb was the headmaster in my last year there. He lasted until, I think, about 1968. He left before the Plume School was set up. The Plume School was set up in 1970, and that really combined Malden Grammar School and the Secondary Modern School in Wants Road. So, in fact, the Plume School is still on the two separate sites. The sites previously occupied by the two schools.
And do you think that was a good move?
Well, that's difficult for me to answer, as I was no longer at the school at the time. I didn't have children that were at the school at the time. I mean, it was part of a general change in education where comprehensive schools were being set up. It was the Plume Comprehensive School to start with. I know it's called something different now. Now the Academy, isn't it? But I think generally it's thought it was a good move. Yes, though now there's a move towards setting up grammar schools again.
So it was a happy few years at the grammar school.
I was happy there, yes, particularly in my later years when I felt more confident in myself. I think I was rather too shy and reserved in my earlier years there. I was briefly subjected to some bullying, not by boys in my own year, but boys in the next year are. But fortunately it didn't last long, but it was very upsetting at the time. It's something I've always remembered as a horrible experience.
I'm sure.
But as I say, fortunately it didn't go on very long. They got tired of it, I think.
And getting to be head boy,
that was at
the
end
school.
yes
that must have been a lovely end to the old school year.
I did appreciate that. I also started acting Not until the sixth form. I didn't. Each year we did a school play then, mostly Shakespeare, though occasionally we did a play by Bernard Shaw and one by Christopher Marlowe. We did Dr. Forster's. Wilfrid Berridge usually directed the Shakespeare plays. Donald Brierley, another master, did the Bernard Shaw plays.
I wanted to ask you about your acting, because that, starting at school, that obviously led into your involvement with the drama club in Malden.
Yes, it was really Donald Brierley that was the link, because I had been in one of his productions at the grammar school. It was The Devil's Disciple, the Bernard Shaw play. And some years later, he had become the regular producer for plays presented by Malden All Saints Drama Guild, who were at that time a church group. Donald Brierley was directing a play called The Chiltern Hundreds by William Douglas Hume, and he had a part he couldn't peel from the present membership, so he wrote to me and asked if I was interested in and available for doing not a big part, but one that was needed and was significant in the action. As it happened, I would have been available, so I said yes, and that was how I came to join All Saints Drama Guild. It's no longer a church group, and it's now called Malden Drama Group, and we no longer present our plays in the church hall. Indeed, the church hall was sold off in London Road, and so we're now a secular group, and we present our plays in the town hall.
So you started off with the drama club after Oxford, when you'd come back to Malden. And then you acted a lot. Did you have?
I've been in a lot of, some leading parts. Yes, others quite minor parts. Very occasionally, I directed plays. Not very many, but generally when nobody else was available to direct, I was a sort of last resort. I didn't rate myself highly as a director, but I very much enjoyed acting.
Can you remember some of the parts that you really enjoyed?
Well, among others, there was Henry VIII in the play called The Rose Without a Thorn, which is about Henry and Catherine Howard. That was certainly a rewarding part, and I was physically quite suited, as I was fairly large. I think probably larger than I am now, actually. So, yes. Sleuth, the famous thriller written by Anthony Schaffer, which is actually for just two actors, though the audience are given the wrong impression that there are going to be more people in it. And I played one of the parts in that, the part that Laurence Olivier did in the first film version of it. That was certainly very rewarding.
And how many plays did you put on?
Well, normally two a year, in the spring and autumn, and sometimes we also did one-act plays. When we were more of a church group, we used to put on short plays or sketches for occasions like the Harvest Festival. But also, after a time, we entered the Jimson one-act festival, which started up in the early 1980s. We entered that most years, and certain awards are made at this festival each year, best play, best actor, best actress, and so on. And we did win quite a number of awards in that.
And did you personally?
I did win.
Well, don't be
best
modest.
I did win best actor on I think three occasions.
Did you?
Yes.
Three occasions. Excellent, yes. And are you still involved with the drama
club? Oh, yes. I don't act so much these days. Normally, if I am in a play, it's in a small part, partly because it's more difficult for me to learn lines now, but also that most plays don't have parts suited to someone of my age. yes, I do. In fact, I've got a very small part in the next production coming up, which is Columbo. It's actually the play on which the TV series Columbo was based. The play came first. But I'm usually the prompt these days. I've been the regular prompt for some years now, which is something I quite enjoy. I know you have to concentrate hard, but it doesn't give you the responsibility of learning lots of lines.
Alfred, the arrival of the bypass road round Malden must have been quite a dramatic change to the area. Do you remember if there was much opposition to the idea?
To the actual Western Bypass, which that runs along the route of what had been the railway that ran round through West Station and on towards Purley Coldmorton and eventually to South Woodham. The thing is, there had also been a proposal for an inner ring road, which would have brought traffic much nearer the centre of Malden, presumably in time quite heavy traffic, and would also have involved the demolition of certain buildings in order to make it work. There was quite a lot of opposition to that locally. There was a campaign indeed that was run, which the Malden Society was involved in. I think the Western Bypass was, if anything, welcomed. Whatever snags that people might have felt it had, it was certainly preferable in most people's eyes to an inner ring road.
And not intrusive, obviously.
And not so intrusive to the town, yes. There were people who expressed regret because since the railway had ceased to run, it had become a sort of, in a way, a wildlife area, much overgrown along the banks of the former railway along there. People felt it had become a bit of unspoilt hilly country. I remember talking to a man at a Malden Society meeting, and he was very much against that bypass because he thought it would destroy that rather unspoilt wildlife area. Mm. I don't think many people felt like that, but certainly a few did. Certainly I much preferred the Western Bypass as an alternative to the other scheme for an inner ring road.
And so it wasn't too disruptive? People coped?
I think, yes, because, it didn't really involve demolition of anything much, apart from sort of trees and undergrowth to a certain extent going round the route there. There had been a railway bridge across the river on part of that route. Was in fact removed, and the present bridge replaced it. The bridge that now carries the bypass across the river at that point. There are, I'm sure, photographs of the bridge that preceded it that carried the railway across there.
You mentioned the Malden Society.
Yes.
How long have you been involved with the Society?
I started going to meetings of the Malden Society quite a long way back in the 1960s. I remember, not right at the very beginning, I remember when I think Arthur Simpson was chairman of the Society and then later Norman Smith. I remember going to a meeting in the 60s which was addressed by David Forder, who was the artistic director of the Repertory Theatre in Colchester, as it then was. It was when there was a campaign to build a new theatre in Colchester, which was to be the Mercury, that's now there. But he was going round talking to people and drumming up support and hopefully some financial backing for the new theatre in Colchester, and he did come and talk to the Malden Society about it. That was one of the early meetings I went to, certainly.
Yeah, the Society started in 1957.
Yes, I didn't go to meetings that... Well, indeed, I was probably still away most of the year then at university. I remember there was a Mrs. Campbell who was the secretary in the early years. I believe a very good, hard-working secretary. She was a chiropodist and she had her place near the top of the High Street.
And did a lot of people go to the talks, or are much the same as it is now?
Much the same as now, from what I remember. Different people were chairman, secretary, treasurer, and so on of the society over the years. For a long time, Kath Backus was the chairman, who is a familiar name, she's I'm sure, to a lot of people. And Maisie Woodward, who was the wife of Albert Woodward, who was mayor of Malden. They were mayor and mayoress. I think she was treasurer for quite a long time.
Do you remember, were there many campaigns run by the Malden Society? You said there was a
well, there was the one particularly, I mean, it wasn't just the Malden Society involved, but they certainly played a part in it, which was really opposing this inner ring road scheme, certainly.
Can I just jump... jump into the High Street. the High Street, when you were a young lad.
Yes.
Obviously, there was a cinema. There
was
which you remember going
to? Oh, indeed, many times. That was the embassy cinema. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to the preceding cinema, the Hippodrome, which was further up the High Street. The building was still there. But at that, by that time, unused and increasingly derelict. But certainly the embassy was very popular in those days. I mean, I started going there in the 1940s. I think the first film I saw was You Were Never Lovelier with Rita Hayworth and Fred Astaire. But yes, I was often taken there in my... when I was small, and then later on in the 50s and into the 60s. There used to be queues outside in those earlier days.
Why was it demolished?
Well, as happening everywhere, audiences were declining for the cinema. In fact, they've since recovered to a considerable extent, but that was after the embassy had been demolished. It closed in the early 1980s, I think it was, and stood there getting increasingly sad looking, and then was demolished, regrettably. I mean, it was a very nice cinema. It had a cafe. I remember going there. You could have lunch there, indeed, at part of the time. The man who was the manager there lived just two doors away from me on Spittle Road. It was a man named Will Smith. It was a Shipman and King cinema in the early days. They were the people who ran it. And yes, I went many times there.
And how do you remember the High Street? Do you remember it as always thriving and busy? Or do you remember a time when many of the shops were closed? What are your
overall memories? No, I mean, I don't... Certainly during the war and the years after the war, I don't remember many shops being... shut and standing empty. I mean, it was quite a busy High Street, even during the war. Not so many of the chain stores then, of course, or some rather smaller ones, not the the present larger types, such as Tesco or Morrison's or anything, but things like Luckin Smith, Green Stores, the Home and Colonial, the International, they were all in the High Street, yes.
Lovely.
There were some buildings have gone, of course, and there were some quite old shops where Iceland is now. And if you look in older photographs, you can see what was there. I remember there was on the corner Hardy King's, and then next to that T.J. Turner and Son, who was a gentleman's outfitters. And then there was the Chequers pub. Which was just across the entrance there, which, although it had a fairly modern-looking front, was in fact quite an ancient building if you looked at it at the back. But sadly, that was knocked down, and Barclays Bank is now there.
But overall, you remember it as a busy and interesting, thriving high
indeed, street. Indeed, yes. I mean, more of the sort of smaller, independent-type shop then than there is now, although there are still quite a few, more than in some towns anyway.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes, I mean, there was a very good grocer's, Collins and Son, quite near the top of the High Street, which and people used to come from outside Malden to shop there, so they're very good grocers indeed.
Good. Thank you, Alfred. Right.